Welcome to Happy Hour. Happy Friday, everybody. He's Adam Harahuck. I'm Sean Cantwell.
What's going on? Nice, beautiful day out there.
Absolutely gorgeous start to the Memorial Day weekend. Can't really ask for much better. The only thing I can ask for better, really, at this point, is a better baseball team. We'll get into that momentarily.
Because we're
now down to four blowouts in a row. At present, you got absolutely annihilated all week long by the Royals. And then you go and follow that up after A.J. Hinch just goes off on the Det News beat writer Chris McCoskey, a guy who's never met a athlete or coach he couldn't ask a softball question to. So I find it rather odd that A.J. Hinch just jumped all over him for asking about the team being competitive and went after him saying it's not a lack of effort, it's not anything like that, which I'm not sure I buy that either, because quite frankly, if you look at this team, they don't look like they're trying. I'm sorry. Like, you can tell me all you want about, oh, these guys are really just grinding it out and battling it out, but we watch these games every night, and it certainly does not look like that's been the case. Now, it's rather interesting that we do actually have a Tigers move that happened after the Wednesday night game, that blowout, where Alex Lang ended up getting demoted to Toledo. So apparently you can move some guys, but then Avi Baez still starts as often as he does. Of course, Alex Lang could still be optioned down to Toledo, and Baez obviously will have to just be bought out altogether. But that happens after Lang gives up a two-run double, and Lang got rather frustrated and ended up, throwing a ball into the dugout or something. Like, he was just not happy about having given up that hit.
Wow.
So there's a whole thing that happened there. And with that being said, I feel like this says to me that A.J. Hinch's hands really are tied. Like, you can send this guy down because, well, you have the ability to do so, but other things are being dictated from above. But all that being said, so Wednesday, Hinch talks to the media, takes exception to McCoskey's question where he says, I take exception to the competitive part. We were pretty competitive. Obviously, they did a tremendous job offensively of scoring a lot of runs, but we fought back each game and stayed competitive. No, that didn't happen at all. 8-3, 10-3, and 8-3. Where's the battling back? Where's the competitive in any of that? I'm not seeing it. I don't know about you. And then they go and lose 9-1 yesterday to Toronto. And Hinch gets asked after the game by one Jeff Rieger about the comments he made on Wednesday and wanted to really clarify the comments about being competitive and taking exception to any suggestion that this team is in fact not competitive. So I'll give you the question here and A.J. Hinch's response.
AJ, yesterday you took exception to the word competitiveness.
Yeah.
If it's not competitiveness, how would you explain the month of May to the fan base?
So the word competitive, I think, can mean a couple different things to a couple different people. So when it was asked to me, it was asked in a way that was talking, and that I felt like it was talking about effort. And being competitive and being and having effort is much different than the win-loss. And so separating those two was where I took exception. If it was about effort, this team's really battling, they're grinding, they're going through it, they're doing everything they can. I watch them. The win-loss part, if that's what competitive means to somebody, then just graded by the end of the game score. And so then that hasn't been competitive in terms of the score the last week, last 2 weeks, even into the last month, like you said, about our May record. So I don't ever mind the question, but I think we should define it if we're going to ask about a team's competitiveness, because you can take that and run with it on your show or anybody's article or whatever they want, which would be unfair talking about effort.
Now, I'm not sure that I believe a word of what was just said there, mostly because the guy who asked the initial question is clearly not a guy that is going to gotcha anybody. and certainly suggest that he wouldn't be, he'd be the last person on earth probably to suggest that a team wasn't being competitive. But that being said, you're not competitive, like even in the slightest. I'm not really that convinced all that much about the effort right now, because this team just they look like they've given up.
They like, really do. I mean, 9-1 against the Blue Jays. Who knows what's going to happen tonight? But I don't see it happening.
Like, it's downright laughable at this point. Like, you're now talking four straight games where you've lost by at least 5 runs, and 2 of those 4 you've lost by 7 or 8. What's it going to take here to get this thing back on track? Well, I don't think there's anything, but some move has to be made, right? I don't care if it's you're bringing up somebody, some prospect of some sort from Toledo to shake things up, or you're getting rid of a hitting coach, or getting rid of some, like, something has to be done here. You'd all know what thing I'd like to see done most of all, and it's something that would certainly send the message that nobody is safe here. But a change has to be made somewhere in all of this. This can't continue to go on like this. Like, you're now sitting at fourth place in a laughably bad division. There's no reason for this team to be as bad as it is, for KC to be showing up and just destroying them. Toronto, the last place team in the AL East, blowing you out. And even now looking good against Miami, the worst team in the National League. There's no reason for any of this to be a thing. There's no good reason why you can't make some sort of adjustment. I don't care what. I don't care who you call it from Toledo at this point. I know that there's not a lot down there. But at this point, Justin Henry Molloy can't possibly do any worse than what you're currently getting from anyone who's currently on this team. I maintain that and will maintain that to my death. There's no way that there could be anyone who's worse than most of your batting order at present. Like, looking at Toledo right now, and I know we can't go entirely off of their stats in AAA to suggest how they might hit the majors, but like right now, Justin Henry Molloy is hitting a robust .273. He's got 5 homers on the season. Ryan Vallade, who got called up for like a day, he's mashing to the tune of a .326 batting average, an OPS of like .968, and he's got a handful of homers as well. Like, at this point, I'd as soon keep him up here, see what he can do. Either of these guys at this point can't do worse than what you're currently trotting out there every night. And quite frankly, if it's a defensive issue which has been suggested is what's keeping Henry Molloy from Detroit anytime soon, how's that different from what you have now? The defense looks atrocious most nights right now. No one's playing particularly well in any facet. Like, they're not hitting and they're not fielding. So what's the difference? I don't think there is one. Honestly, what could it hurt at this point to put the message out there that, look, there's someone down there that has at least as good of a shot to do as well as you are, and we will absolutely call them up if you don't get your you-know-what together.
I think so. Because, I mean, whether A.J. Hinch wants to argue semantics between competitiveness and effort, well, guess what's going to clear that all up? Seeing some young kid coming in to take your job.
Absolutely it is. And at this point, I don't know or care if there's a difference between effort and being competitive. Because either way, from a lot of that team, it doesn't look like you're getting, well, either one, and you're getting to the point now where the pitching can't hold it all together. Like, that worked for just long enough, but it's not the case anymore. Like, you can't go out there and expect every night that your starters are going to go 7 innings and give up 0 runs. That's just not reasonable, and it seems like that's almost what's being expected. And you're starting to see the results of that in this last couple games. Like, Reese Olson goes out there, only makes it 2 2/3 innings. He ends up going out injured, and the bullpen basically proceeds to mostly Joey Wentz to melt down from there. You have The next night, you send out Casey Mize, and he ends up getting shelled to the tune of 6 earned runs. The night after that, you have Tarek Skubal, your all-star, go out and get drilled to the tune of 4 earned runs. These guys have been carrying this team for the last almost 2 months, and they're getting tired. Like, they're going to have bad nights. Like, I can't even be mad at Mize for blowing up, or Jack Flaherty giving up 3 earned runs the other night against Toronto. I can be mad at the fact that the bullpen is also seemingly unable to stop the bleeding at this point. Certainly Alex Fido and Mason Englert, he just called up. Mason Englert didn't do any favors to anybody either. But I can't even be mad at the pitching, because you've done what was expected of you by and large. You got to be able to have a night every so often where the bats come out and can actually kind of pull you through for a bit. You got to have at some point, all right, every start is not going to be a 6-inning, no runs, you know, just gem of a game. You got to count on your offense to steal you a game or two every so often, and that's just not happening right now. And so when something like this happens, it's absolutely a failure of your offense to be able to give your guys any relief. I mean, look at Reese Olson's season to this point. He's only given up on average like 2 runs a night, and then he proceeds to go and get no help from anybody. He hasn't won a game yet this season, and he's going out and giving you everything he has every night. And you better just hope that he doesn't end up missing any time, because even if you do, you know, have a Matt Manning to pull up and he can be serviceable, like, you need all the help you can get right now. Like, you just need a bat somewhere to start, you know, hitting in clutch situations, and you just, those are few and far between right now. You got Kerry Carpenter, Riley Green, and even he's not hitting as well as you'd like to see. And then, like, maybe 2 other guys that look like major league players at the plate. It's just, it's going to make for a really long summer if they can't get that figured out and at least get things somewhat turned around here. Hopefully they do. I hope that I'm sitting here in August with the Lions about to start and things are looking up for the Tigers. And, all right, I'm not completely just depressed waiting for preseason football to start. But at the rate things are going right now, I feel like that's exactly where I'm going to be. And we're just going to not be talking a lot of sports this summer if this keeps up. Because I don't know about you, I can't keep subjecting myself to this every night. I try. I am trying so hard. But it's getting old, and the fact that the front office is just sitting there like the dog in the at the table while the house is on fire does not help things at all.
Yeah, I don't know. I see it more of like Nero when Rome is burning. He just kind of just sat there and played a violin. He's like, yeah, it doesn't affect me. The fire's not getting to me.
Same difference, really. But a lot to get to this afternoon. It's happy hour. Stick around. We'll come back with maybe something less depressing after this. So the Pistons have hired a new babysitter, apparently.
Yeah, I heard, they already do this, or were they just talking about it?
Well, they've been talking about creating that position and filling it not long after the season ended, but they've just now actually got their guy. Although, I don't know if it's necessarily the guy, or even the guy who would have been the best fit here, but Trajan Langdon, he is your new president of basketball operations for your Detroit Pistons. For whatever this might be worth. So he's got a history with he was a GM for the New Orleans Pelicans, and quite frankly, I'm not entirely convinced that this is a even a lateral move, certainly not a move up, I would think. I don't know if there is a president of basketball operations down there, but this would put him basically in charge of the whole show here.
I guess if that's the shiny point on his resume, he's in trouble.
Yeah, because the Pelicans have not historically, certainly in recent times, been particularly great. Like, there's been some decent hits and some also decent-sized misses with the Pelicans and their drafting. Like, they've drafted a couple decent players, guys like Herb Jones, Trey Murphy III, but they've also, like, whiffed on, like, Kira Lewis Jr. Like, they've really they've amassed quite the trove of draft picks, what with, you know, trading Anthony Davis, him wanting out of Dodge in the worst way possible.
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
So they acquired a lot of draft capital, but have only just kind of... They haven't necessarily used it all and, you know, done particularly well in using it. And what do the Pelicans really have to show for that to this point? I mean, it doesn't help that, you know, Zion Williamson is basically perpetually injured. Like, you can never really guarantee from season to season if he's actually going to play. But of the last... So since Langdon came on board with the Pelicans, which was back in 2019, May 2019. In that time, five seasons with the Pelicans. In three of those years, they didn't qualify for the playoffs. In one of those years, they won two games against Phoenix and got bounced. And this year, they got swept by the Thunder in the first round. Like, I'm not sure that what groundwork they've put down is really going to put them in a position to contend in the future, but it certainly can't be any worse than what he's walking into here, where he's got Cade Cunningham, who may or may not honestly even be here by the time his rookie deal is up. Like, this team may just elect to ship him on, basically do the Anthony Davis thing, except, you know, Anthony Davis probably have more value to a lot of teams than Cade is going to.
Yep.
But I feel like that's going to be the first major decision that awaits him when he arrives here. Other than, obviously, are you going to keep Troy Weaver for a couple more weeks before firing him out of a cannon, or just do it now and get it over with? I'm still not entirely convinced necessarily that Weaver's a goner. He should be. He should be, and honestly, Monty Williams should be too, because I said at the time I thought he was a good hire, and it seemed like at the time he was the right fit for the squad that it seemed like Weaver was trying to build. And as it turns out, he spent a lot of the season trying to fit a lot of round pegs into square holes, and it didn't end up panning out the way I think any of us wanted it to. And by that I mean the team was historically bad. And it was obvious he didn't want to be here from the jump. He even said at that press conference, he's basically, I'm only here because Tom Gores offered me so much money I couldn't say no. That's basically the whole reason he's even here, because he'd offered and not really interested. Oh, you're just backing up the Brinks truck to my house. Okay, I'll go and run your garbage franchise for a year or two. So, I mean, he probably should honestly be gone as well. A big, huge Brinks truck deal of a contract aside. And Troy Weaver, there's no argument that he should be here. Absolutely none to be had. He's gotten you into the situation you're at. Hasn't really managed to acquire draft capital nor use it on anything that would help this team. And you're basically, your franchise player is due for a supermax deal at the end of this season. And quite frankly, that doesn't even seem to be a thing that the Pistons should be doing right now. Like, I think that's probably the first thing ultimately that Langdon needs to be tasked with, is seeing what kind of value you can extract out of Cade before that deal's up. Because if he is the player that we all think he is and want him to be, this team's probably not going to be ready to contend for the first several years of that extension. And he's going to be eligible for the Supermax, which is like 5 years, $270 million.
Wow. Yeah,
That's what that is. Like, that's...
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And someone would absolutely give that to him elsewhere if the Pistons don't. So, either... And there's no necessarily guarantee that he wants to stick around and be part of this dumpster fire for any longer than he absolutely has to. So I feel like the only option here is to see if you can find a taker and get the kind of draft haul that could help you set up this organization to contend long term. Now, again, whether Langdon's necessarily the guy to get the most out of that draft capital, that's hard to say. Again, he's had some big hits, he's had some big misses. And he may not necessarily be a huge upgrade in the draft room over Troy Weaver, although I maintain that he cannot possibly be worse. Yeah, I know. You drafted Cade Cunningham. Look at you go. You took the obvious number one pick. And admittedly, it also doesn't help that in every other year, the Pistons have got just hosed horrifically in the draft every year, in the draft lottery. But this really suggests to me that this was kind of a backup plan anyway.
Yeah.
A, it seems like they're kind of admitting defeat on the Troy Weaver thing. All right, clearly we screwed up, but we're going to make him do the firing as opposed to us just canning him, bringing in this guy to run the show, and admitting that we screwed up. Because I don't know that Gorez and Arn Tellem are necessarily capable of doing that. But I think it's also pretty obvious the guy they wanted is Tim Connelly, who is currently the president of basketball operations and GM for the Timberwolves, who are, at last check, currently actually in the playoffs.
Wow.
They're actually doing, like, they've built a pretty solid team over there that will hopefully, for their sake, be contending for a while to come. And he had opted out of his deal because he's trying to get more money, ultimately. And I think all that the Detroit talk was just kind of, all right, I want to stay in Minnesota, but I'm going to see if I can't boost my price a little bit before I ultimately agree to come back to the T-Wolves. So I think you were always getting stood up by him. This isn't a terrible option. He's probably going to be a good head basketball guy, but it doesn't inspire, I think, a lot of confidence among the Pistons faithful, unless he fires everybody out of a cannon, like the second he gets there. We got to hit a break. It is happy hour at Solid State Radio. It is happy hour, and it is the time of the show where we pull away from the depression that is Detroit sports to try and help people and change lives, occasionally even for the better. Yes, it's time once again for another exciting installment of Sean and Adam's Unsolicited Advice.
Yes.
Where real people with real problems send real questions to real advice columnists.
But
unfortunately for them, we intercept, we get our hands on them, and I think, quite frankly, we give better advice than the people who get paid to do this crap for a living.
All right.
Let's dive right in, shall we?
Woo-hoo-hoo.
Oh, I got a doozy one to kick off today. Dear anybody other than Sean and Adam, my husband just told me he wants a deeper relationship with one of his friends, but they both don't want to cross any boundaries I'd not approve of. She happens to be single and 20 years younger.
Oh, boy.
He said he's energized by her enthusiasm for life, admires her greatly, and that they have many common interests. He wants to be able to take her places and go to events with her that I'm not interested in attending. I find this not only very hurtful, but absurd and inappropriate. This is an emotional affair in my eyes. Am I crazy?
No, you're not.
It's not just an emotional affair, hate to tell you.
Yeah, I mean, he can say, oh, she just gets me. I bet she does.
Oh, she. I bet she does.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I would want to ask the writer, so he wants to go out and do these things. Why aren't you doing these things with him? Why can't you, you know, I mean, you say you don't like them, but I mean, if he really wants to do it, I mean, if the roles were reversed, if he didn't like going out and doing what you wanted to do, I'd tell him, suck it up, champ. You got a wife, and she wants to do it. Happy wife, happy life. So, if, you know, if he wants to go to a concert or something, go with him. Why? He's your husband.
I mean, to be fair, you don't necessarily have to be tied to your, joined at the hip to your spouse all the time anyway. I mean,
no,
there are some
not,
things that she enjoys doing that I don't, like ever going outside. And there are some things that I do that she doesn't have much interest in, like, you know, baseball or, you know, most sports things.
Right. So
that's a little bit of a gross exaggeration, but still.
Yeah, yeah, that was very simplified. I don't see, as far as the other woman, they're all over the boundaries. It's all over the place. That you're just not getting the truth.
Well, it's actually pretty amazing here, the effort to almost gaslight you, but, well, I can, It's kind of like he's trying to trick you into approving this and be like, well, I asked you for it, so, you know, it's okay. That's not cheating, technically, because you said I could do it.
Yeah.
Like, he's trying to set it up for you to be the bad guy because you're denying him the ability to go places and do things with this person. It's actually pretty impressive if it weren't so brazen and stupid.
Or maybe this guy is that much of a moron. He doesn't realize that things could get weird real quick. Yeah, yeah. You say there's boundaries, but, you know, let's face it. Things happen. You know, I don't know. It's just all kinds of wrong. No, Ryder, you are not crazy.
You're not crazy at all. In fact, I don't honestly believe that this man can be stupid enough to think that this younger 20-something, pretty young thing, that there's not some sort of attraction there. Like, I don't think for a second that he knows what he's doing. He's probably been carrying on with her behind your back this whole time.
Oh, yeah.
And now he's trying to get you to actively be okay with it so that when you ultimately leave him, which is probably what you should do, if he persists in this, he can make himself not look like the bad guy. That's what's going on here.
She let me do it. In fact, she encouraged it.
She said it was totally cool for me to do this. Yeah, I bet she did.
Yeah. I don't know. Ryder, you need to cut out Miss Thing out of both of your lives and just lay down the boundaries.
Yeah, you've got to absolutely set that boundary. You're like, no, you don't get to have a, like, this is taking work wife to a whole nother level.
Oh, yeah.
No, you don't, that's not how this is going to work. Like, you can go out and do things with people, but we're not having, like, you're not having a pseudo-girlfriend. That's not how this is going to work.
Yeah.
No, you're absolutely not in the wrong. You're not crazy.
Oh, we're just best friends. I had a situation where a friend of mine I played in a band with, his wife kept wanting to hang around the best man in their wedding. Because, oh, we're just really good friends. We'd like to go out fishing together. And guess what? She divorced him, and guess who she's married to now?
The best man?
Ding, ding, ding.
That I imagine, has to really just sour a friendship real quick.
Yeah. He can hardly look at the wedding photos.
No, that just absolutely run at this point. I mean, obviously set the boundary. Like, no, you can't do this. And if you are going to do this, I'm going to leave you. Like, it's clear he's just not invested in your marriage as much as you are.
Yep.
That much is ungodly self-evident here. Let's dive into another one real quick, shall we? Dear someone who cares.
Yes.
My husband and I have been married 2.5 years. We have a good marriage, but this winter, during a casual conversation in front of the TV, I was fishing for a compliment, and he responded that he considers me an 8 out of 10 in terms of looks. I got really upset. He claims he was trying to make an unsuccessful joke, and he thinks I look great. I have a hard time seeing the humor. I told him he needs to make it up to me. He's done nothing. It's been more than 4 months, and I'm having a really hard time with this. I've been taking it out on him by being extremely critical lately. I'm not a very secure person to begin with, thus the fishing, though I definitely consider myself attractive. I don't know how I'm supposed to live the rest of my life with someone who can tell me I'm an 8 to him, even as a joke. He's otherwise a great husband, and he's been making an effort to compliment me a lot lately, but I have a hard time believing him.
Okay. I hope this writer is listening. Listen, ma'am. Shut up. Simply just shut up. You're fishing for a compliment. You were digging for a fight is what you were doing. You were digging for a fight. You have to understand something about most men. Most men, we're not in tune with our emotions. Yes, I mean a smart man would be, oh, no, you're a 10, baby. Oh, you're 11, absolutely. I mean, if Scarlett Johansson and Jennifer Lawrence were to come over, I'd be like, hey, ladies, my wife gets to go first. So, you're fishing for an argument, you got one, and now it's not going your way.
And that's the worst. She says that she's then, since then, hey, he needs to make it up to me. He's done nothing. Like,
what is he supposed to do?
Exactly. And also, I've been taking it out on him by being extremely... So you're just playing head games now. That's yes. clearly what you're doing.
What could he do to make it up to you?
I don't think there's anything he could do.
Because you know what? There is no right answer. Because I'm going to send you out to a makeover and make you into a 10. That's going to really irritate her and be very expensive, by the way.
Right. You're going to spend a lot of money to not even fix the problem.
You're going to come home and there's just going to be like the number 10 everywhere, you know, on the clock. There's going to be a little arrow pointing at a 10. Says, that's you.
I mean, I guess.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't really. What, just Pearl Jam's 10 album playing over and over and over.
I mean, maybe that's what you got to do. I don't know.
I mean, I wouldn't hate that. 10 was a great album.
Sure.
But, I mean, unless you're willing to really sit there and, you know what, why don't you try this. Say he's a 6. Oh, and as far as guys go, you're a 6. And, you know, us guys, we look at some other men that are around in our lives and we're like, 6, all right. Yeah, we're doing okay.
I'll take being a 6 absolutely all day, every day. Like, I'm not going to complain in the slightest about that. Like,
no.
Like, I'm passable 3 most days. Right. You think I'm a 6? Sweet. You're like, I've accomplished something.
You've
today.
Heard me fart in the shower. You still think I'm a 6? Wow. I don't know what to say. I'm getting a little verklempt here.
That's the sweetest thing anyone's ever said to me.
You saw me after trying to go shot for shot in tequila night. You saw me the next day, and you still consider me a 6? Will you marry me again?
Right. Marry me, double marry me. Like, let's renew those vows like right now.
Yeah. In fact, here's everybody. Your mom and dad are already here. I know your dad died last week. We brought him up.
Wow.
Dearly beloved, we're gathered here again. I don't know why to. I guess rejoin these two. Let's skip to the vows. I promise to love and wed you because you called me a 6 when I'm definitely a 4 at best. Is that what you want?
Apparently. I don't know. Because, I mean, on the traditional, that scale, I mean, for one, just as a general rule, it's probably not a good idea ever to call your significant other anything less than a 10. But also you run the risk there of being, okay, that's clearly not believable because a 10's like, you know, a 10's like Scarlett Johansson or, you know, some sort
no,
of like
just I mean,
absolutely unattainable.
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, there's some women out there that are quote-unquote beautiful, like a Scarlett Johansson or a Megan Fox, but there's always that one little thing that maybe keeps them at a 9, maybe 9.5. Has there ever been a 10? And before anybody pops off, Marilyn Monroe was not a 10.
No?
No. No.
All right, let's see. I want to hear the rationale behind this now.
She just wasn't. I mean, that mole on her face, that's like melanoma. The woman had melanoma. If it wasn't for the Kennedys, she would have died from skin cancer anyway.
Wow. Some strong words for a passable 2.
A 2? Well, geez, I don't know what to say.
Well, it was a 1, but you finally cleaned up the homeless beard a little bit, so
it's starting to come back. I need to go. I'm growing it back just so I can get a hot shave. Anyway, but I mean, yeah. I mean, first of all, this guy needs to really understand things about women, especially he doesn't understand his own woman. If she says, what would you rate me, 1 out of 10? Brother, lie your
the 10 should
off.
Probably be the lowest thing, 10, lowest number that you say.
Oh, honey, I would rate you a 10, but that's too low. You are a 12. You are definitely a 12. Now go get me a beer.
Like, did she ask, actually, because I'm trying to, like, really glean this from the letter. Like, did she start out by asking him, like, what do you rate, like, on a scale of 1 to 10? Because that was also a stupid thing for you to do. Well, but again, you've already admitted you're fishing for compliments here.
The letter, I can't remember. I know they were together. They've been married for 2.5 years. Great.
Yeah, I was fishing for a compliment, and he responded, he considers me an 8. It doesn't say that she asked. Like, why? She was fishing for a compliment, but it doesn't say that she necessarily asked. Like, if she asked him specifically to rate me on the scale, that was stupid of you to do.
Maybe, is it possible that this was, like, during quarantine and where people just were, you know, just stir crazy, and they're sitting there watching, you know, whatever. And she just wanted to fight. They've been seeing each other off and on for weeks, and
oh, clearly she wanted to fight. That much seems pretty obvious at this point.
She was picking a fight. I mean, in her mind, she's like, "Ding ding, let's get ready to rumble."
Oh yes, there's no doubt in my mind. She knew exactly what she was doing when she did that.
Hi, do you think I'm a 10? No, honey, I think you're an 8. Ding ding ding. Oh, here we go, round one. I mean, come on, brother. Is this your first woman? Is this your first rodeo? I mean,
I think I almost wonder it might be.
Learn, brother. Learn
from
this, guys. Let's talk to the guys that are out there. Lie to your women. I mean, I know that's wrong. Don't lie about the big things. It's the little things. It's how many women before her have you been with? Lie about that. Whatever that number is, divided by 3. You want to make sure that, you know, if she asks if she's a 10, she's a 10.5, she's 11. Tell her, it's like, hey, honey, aren't you from Tennessee? And she'll say no. She says, really? Because you're the only 10 I see. I'm helping here. Just if she says, does this dress make me look fat? The answer is no. Or if you want to tell the truth, but kind of lie and still have a good conscience, say, yeah, that's fat, P-H-A-T, baby girl.
That's also, can I just put this out there? Never, ever, ever ask that question. I mean, also just don't ever, never answer in the affirmative on that question, guys.
No.
But don't, like, why do you want to set yourself up for that? Like, why do you want to set yourself up to potentially hear an honest answer on that?
No,
like,
no, you got to lie.
Why are you even asking this question?
Honey, like, should I wax my upper lip? No, I love Billy Dee Williams. I think this is amazing.
Wow. Oh, apologize to Billy Dee Williams now?
Yes, please do.
Women in general.
Marilyn Monroe. Please put Marilyn Monroe. I don't know. My first foray into heaven, she'd be there, slap me across the face. No, my dad would be like, hit him again.
As well you deserve it, sir.
No, I mean, lie to your women, lie to your guys. Every once in a while, it's like, oh, I just can't get this pickle jar open. I need some. Oh, thank you, honey. My wife does it to me all the time. My woman can break the lug nuts off a tire. She needs help with the pickle. I know she doesn't need help with the pickle jar, but she just makes me feel good about myself.
See, she doesn't do that stuff to me. She has no problem making me not feel like... I don't need you to do any of this. Here, you give me that stuff, I'll go work on the car because I actually know what I'm doing. Like,
why don't you just sit?
Here, why don't you sit down and let me do...
Throws you some Tinker Toys, build mommy something nice.
It's Legos, actually. Thank you very much.
No, she doesn't trust you with Legos.
You're right.
She gets the Legos. You get... You get Lincoln Logs. The box hasn't been open since 1972.
Oh, it's funny because it's true.
Yeah.
There is a point to this, and that's okay. I remember what
lie
it was
to your women. Lie. It's okay. It's the small lies. Don't be like, where were you all weekend? I was abducted by Area 51. No, don't
you're
do that.
You're abducted by Area 51? How does that even
the
work?
The entire Area 51 going, you, come here. Come here a minute.
No, hey, you.
I was just hanging out with E.T. and everybody, and it was a rough weekend. How was yours? And ladies, you got to lie, too. It's like, oh, I was bored. I didn't go see my ex-boyfriend. Not at all. Nope.
Well, I didn't do anything all weekend.
Me and my yoga instructor, no, we're still platonic friends, yeah.
Absolutely.
Don't go in the shower. He's not done yet. Sorry.
My only advice, quite frankly, is for the guy, and that is get out of this. Get out of this whole relationship.
It's a small little... You want him to divorce the whole thing because she's a little needy? That's people, Sean. That's people.
It's not even the needy part. It's the fact that he's just going to play, like, psychological head games with you for the rest of your relationship. You don't need that kind of nonsense in your life. Dumper.
Here's how things work in Sean's head. Sean, am I a 10? No, you're an 8. Oh, I don't have it. He's like, throws a TV tray across the room. I'm out of here.
Well, no, because I'm not... Because I didn't marry a woman that would ever ask me that question, for one. I mean, and I also know how to answer it. Thank you very much. Because mine actually is a 10.
He'd finish the little bit of beer on that's on the TV tray, set it off to the side, put a coaster under it, and then throw the TV trays.
Well, yeah, of course. That just goes without saying.
He's just looking for... You were just like a ticking time bomb, just waiting for... You're like a landmine, waiting for somebody to step on you. Because it is like... Oh,
is
yeah,
it my...
you're an 8. What? Oh, you have a problem with that? Well, then I'm out of here.
Is it my fault that I expected perfection and got it? Can we really blame me for this? I think not.
See, now that would have saved the whole thing right now. Say, what are you getting mad for? I expected perfection and I got it. Look at you. Look at you. You're not, I mean, you're not a 10 right now. You're actually being kind of like a 9.5, but you know, maybe if you sweeten up, stop sassing off with me.
And this is why Adam's going to be served with divorce papers when he gets home today.
Wow. There's a divorce papers with a dagger stuck in the wall.
That's impressive.
Oh my God. No, I'm saying it from your perspective. That's what you're, yeah, that's what you're saying.
Except I'm not. Except I would have cut myself off long before you did, and that is why I'm still happily married.
For 1 year now, yes, that's right, yes, 1 year. How long were these guys? Two and a half years.
2.5 years. Yeah,
and you're like,
marriage.
Cut bait.
I've also been with mine for 10 years. Thank you very much. Looks like we're apparently just going to open Pandora's box completely in the world of college athletics.
Why not? At this point, just, I want to watch the world burn now.
I really kind of do too. And it looks like we're going to get our wish as there has been a historic settlement. And really, it's a historic day for sports. As of yesterday, the NCAA and its power conferences agreed Thursday to allow college athletes to receive pay directly from the universities they play for. Setting up a potential break from the organization's century-old system of amateurism. The two sides in the House versus NCAA class action lawsuit formally announced terms of a multi-billion dollar settlement that stands to reshape college sports, including $2.75 billion in back pay damages the NCAA will owe
back
to former
pay.
D1 athletes.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's the big one.
As well as a future revenue sharing model between power conference schools and athletes. Well, I mean... We're talking that many schools and players and whatnot, yeah. Like going back over a century. Like, there's not that many people ultimately getting that big of a share. Like, everyone just gets like a check for 5 cents by the time all is said and done.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah.
I mean, we're including everyone that's still alive, presumably, that's played in any sport, even like the ones that no one cares about, like lacrosse. Like, so we're still going to have to, like, no one's getting that big of a cut of the pie.
Okay. Yeah, that is so irresponsible. I mean, I hate to say it because there's a lot of college players who've come up through the ranks who maybe they didn't make the NFL, but they still had their likeness, name, and image on TV and everything, and they didn't get paid for it. But at the same time, you can't be college tuition is already high enough. You can't really sit there, oh, okay, we got tuition up 25% for everybody because we didn't pay our kicker 30 years ago enough. That doesn't make sense.
It doesn't, and I'm still not entirely sure how the back pay damages works out ultimately because we're talking $2 billion that's going to be paid over... like 10 years. But then there's also going to be, it looks like, when it comes to revenue sharing, the release specified that the 22% of the average of Power Conference programs' revenues allotted for revenue sharing is for the first year of the settlement. That will translate to an amount projected to be significantly more than $20 million per school per year. So that would be, basically you'll have $20 million to spend per school, almost like a salary cap on paying for athletes.
Yeah, yeah. Why? I mean, watch a few schools just shut their program down.
I mean, I'm sure that will absolutely happen in a lot of cases. But also the thing about that is, you have that $20 million, but that's across all of your athletic programs. So what's to stop a school from just spending $10 million on a quarterback and then no one else gets, like, everyone else gets table scraps, basically?
Like, yeah, like the left tackle was, well, you're getting an education. I'm majoring in basket weaving. I was hoping for some money.
It's really kind of a, you have that, and then you've also got, like, when does Title IX play into this? Because you can't discriminate, so, like the men's basketball players, I have to be getting paid at a level commensurate to the women's or something. Like, yeah, I think that's how that would have to work.
The, men's football, and next thing you know,
you don't have a women's football.
It'd be the volleyball teams or gymnastics going that route. I mean, I think that college player. You know what? Quite frankly, I don't know what to think because I am really in the battle of my minds because it's. Should they get something? Yes, they should. I mean, aside from their scholarship, but at the same time, it's like you're really opening up a Pandora's box. You really are.
Yeah, this was an odd way ultimately to go about this. They're also saying scholarship caps would be eliminated by the settlement and give way to roster limits. No details or specifics were provided, but schools are expected to have some flexibility on how scholarships are distributed. Could also create some numbers challenges in adapting from the current model of scholarship limits within larger roster limits, possibly eliminating walk-on athletes, which would be unfortunate in and of itself, because, I mean, you've had some great stories over the years of players who've just come in as a walk-on and ended up being, like, big parts of championships and things and go on to really be successful. So but that part of it would also
$20 million. I mean, that's the lion's share of it is going to go to a handful of players, just to make sure. And everybody else seems to be like, why is the QB? I just answered my own question. Why are they getting so much? They're the QB. Okay, I get it. So I guess I'll second string. I'll just sit here and be glad I've got a scholarship.
Yeah, it's just such a Pandora's box you're opening. There's so many questions, really. Like, the Title IX thing is a big one. Like, are you going to actually just go and do collective bargaining with the athletes? Like, there are so many things. Like, ultimately, you're still going to have boosters. That's going to be a thing because it just says that the school itself can pay out to this much, not that A, the school has to pay all this out, and B, that you can't also have boosters paying out. You can't pay more than that, but you don't have to pay up to that. You can let the boosters kind of fill in the gaps there, because now that once the NIL deals came into play, the whole booster system, which was always there, like that was always a thing anyway, going into before in the pre-NIL era, those were always there. It just wasn't talked about. It was a lot more hush-hush than it is now that it's not against all of the rules and laws and what have you. So that's still going to be a thing, too. Like, they're still going to be trying to get their big money donors to pony up to pay for these things, and that's probably how most of that money, I imagine, will still be allocated even now.
Yeah.
Like, there's some things I don't imagine it's going to change really at all. Like, it's not going to change, you know, the academic experience. Like, you're not protecting the student athletes by not paying them for their athletics. They're still going to be giving these kids scholarships to go to these schools. That's not going to change because they're still student athletes. And there is still at least the idea, like, you're playing for our school, so we have to still give you a free education regardless. Because otherwise, how does that make any sense? Because then you're not a student athlete. Like, there is still the rule that you have to be a student to be a student athlete. Like, the fact that they're getting paid doesn't change that.
Well, they could say, well, if you're going to get X amount of dollars to be a running back for the team, we don't have to give you a scholarship. You have to, I mean, if you're making that money, you should be able to pay your own way into that school.
Yeah, but realistically, don't you think that's going to be factored into this anyway? Like, they're going to ultimately take that cost out of whatever they'd be paying them? to keep it all within the rules, so you're not like actively shelling out money.
There are a lot of what ifs until we actually see the rubber to the road as far as this is going to go. Because I mean, I think the players should get paid, but this is. It's gonna be a real bumpy road.
It asks a lot more. It really creates a lot more questions than it does answers.
Yes,
but I don't ultimately think this is going to be just the death of the sport. Like, I certainly don't see a scenario in which people are going to be like, you know what, I can't watch this anymore because these kids are actually getting paid to sacrifice their bike.
There are going to be a lot of people out there going, the same people say they'll never watch the NFL again because of Taylor Swift.
But they always come back. They always come back.
They never leave. They may not watch the tail end of that game because their team's losing. But, I mean,
right,
they come back.
They're not going to be watching games with their buddies. But, you know, they're sitting around with a transistor radio somewhere listening to the end of the game where they're sitting at home watching it the whole time.
Yes, they are.
These boycotts of this sort are always overstated. Because how many times I've heard the same, and it's always the same people that say, I'll never watch this again. And then, I'll never watch this again. I'll never watch it. I thought you already said that three issues ago.
Right. Then the ratings come down for the NCAA.
More people are watching than ever.
They're still the 800-pound gorilla, both of them.
I mean, I do think that there are things that college football could do and are quite frankly on a path to doing that are ultimately going to result in less people watching. Like, if they really insist on trying to force, say, marquee games to streaming services. If that ever happens, like if ultimately Michigan State or U of M and Ohio State ever get put on Peacock as an exclusive, things are going to bottom out. People are not going to go and shell out the money just to have that for the one game every week or whatever. That would be something I think. Like, if they start moving the marquee matchups, like, I'm already not liking that they're doing it with the NFL. And they've just added now, I think, Netflix. They have now, like, four different streaming partners that they've added for future seasons. That is something that I think has far more potential to do damage to football than paying college athletes ever could.
Yes.
I don't see how that's going to be the thing that brings upon the end of the sport as we know it. Oh my God, they're getting paid? I can't watch this.
There are going to be a lot of people who romanticize they romanticize about the whole college.
It was so much
better. The same people also don't want to tip servers. It's okay, I'm watching these people who aren't getting paid play for my amusement. They're earning a contract. They're earning whatever they're doing, but at the same time, they're not getting paid for my amusement. Run, baby, run.
I tell you, the trucker hat, sunglasses, lifted truck, real news crowd is probably going to be real up in arms about this, but I'll tell you what, I'll guarantee you, when their team plays on Saturday, or I guess Friday night now, because that's going to be a thing.
Yeah, it's not the trucker hats. It's going to be the older guys who are our greatest, our best generation. We're the baby boomers.
Yeah, but that everybody diagram overlaps needs, a lot, though.
They do, but, I mean, the trucker hat people with the glasses, a lot of those are in their 30s. These guys are like, I remember back in the day, they just want to keep bringing things back to their day. And now I'm really going to bag on baby boomers. I've done that way too much recently, so I'm going to stop. But the point is there.
Do I have to apologize to boomers?
At the very end, please. The point is there that they want to be able to romanticize, look at all these kids. These kids, they're just, they're doing this for
their love of the sport.
They're for the sport. They're doing it for their school. They're not getting paid. They're doing it for the U of M. They're doing it for the hail to the, they're playing for
hail
their school.
Hail to the cheaters, what?
Yeah, they're not even allowed to date cheerleaders, or so I'm told.
These people, I feel like sometimes just nostalgic for a time that never was.
Yeah, exactly. And then at that point, all the people who were born after 79, those people are like, I just want my team to win.
That's all I'm asking. That's all I really care about, ultimately.
And then if you are a union kind of person, you're like, if these people are on there being on TV all the time and their name and face and stats are all over the TV screen, and now they're all back on, you know, games, everything else. They should get paid.
Which I'm fine with. And I think that's something that I don't see as being a bad thing for the sport. Whether it's a good thing, I don't think it's really a net anything, honestly. I mean, it's good for the players as far as the effect it's going to have on the sport at large. I don't think it's going to have any more effect than, say, all the conference realignment and the big contracts that are being signed on TV. And like, these things, quite frankly, have far more potential to hurt the sport than some guys going out and actually being able to make money off of their labor. We got to hit a break. We'll come back and we'll close this thing off next. It is Happy Hour. Stick around.
That's it. It's over.
Jack Daniels!
Happy Hour. It is about time for us to get out of Dodge here.
We still have weekend. Come on, man. I'm scratching.
I know. You're so ready. Yes. And I'm not going to deny you any longer, as they say in hockey.
Yay.
Let's do that hockey.
Woo! The conference finals have started. Two teams have struck first blood. First, we talk about the Eastern Conference. Panthers. The Florida Panthers beat the Rangers 3-0.
3-0, Sean. I was not expecting a
shutout. I'm still expecting the Panthers to come out of this one, but I wasn't thinking in four. Shut the Blue Shirts out.
That was a stunner. I figured New York would look a lot, would come with a lot more energy than this, especially with what we know about that team and how they're that very physical, gritty team. Like it seemed like they should match up perfectly against the Panthers, and we didn't see that. Although, is worth pointing out, Matt Rempe did not end up in the lineup for Game 1. He hasn't played, and not due to injury or anything. He's just been a healthy scratch since Game 5 against Carolina.
Okay, well, the Rangers head coach needs to get his collective head out of his what? And, you know, get Rempe into the lineup.
Needs to happen.
It really does. But I mean, okay, so...
So far, Pierre Laviolette is not saying whether he'll be in or out for Game 2.
I'm seeing a lot of the message boards, because that's where the really rational people hang out.
you're a funny guy over there.
Yeah. So, I mean, but they bring up a good point. And so I'm going to make the point, and I want your initial reaction, Sean.
All right, let's hear it.
So the Metropolitan Division in the NHL are weak. And the Atlantic Division in the NHL is the strongest division in the entire league.
I would say the Metro is definitely a lot weaker than the Atlantic by a long shot. Like, it's basically, it's the Rangers, to an extent, a bunch of jerks, and not much else. You have a Washington team that basically needed Detroit to collapse to get in, and then promptly showed that they had no business being there.
Yeah.
The Islanders weren't markedly better. They only managed to get one win against a bunch of jerks and then get bounced out.
Yep.
New York took care of them in six. I would honestly argue that, yeah, New York and Carolina are the only really good to great teams in the Metro. As far as the idea of the Atlantic, I mean, the Atlantic's certainly a deep conference. But, well, Boston, we know what Boston is, and they honestly gave a lot more fight than I think any of us expected, considering that, you know,
correct,
it's a team that's
on
kind of the older side. Toronto, I mean, they're a strong team in a lot of ways, just very top-heavy. And Tampa, we know what Tampa is. I would say there's definitely
a discussion
to be had that any of those teams could hang with the Blue Shirts and would beat the brakes off of the Isles or the Caps. And maybe even beat Carolina in six. Now, as far as the strongest team all the way around, or strongest division all the way around, that's a toughie, because I would also suggest that the Pacific is every bit as good. I mean, Vancouver-Edmonton should have been your Western Conference final, honestly.
Yeah.
Not that Dallas isn't good. Dallas, honestly,
Dallas is great.
They're great. Colorado is also a good team. I would put, honestly, Colorado better than, say, the Jets. So you've got two really strong teams in the Central. I would argue you have three in the Pacific with Vancouver, Edmonton, and Vegas. And even the Kings, for what it was worth, they
Kings
yeah they
have
got
been showing some life, haven't they?
They really have. Like, I would say the Pacific has a strong argument to be made as well, but I think you could reasonably say that, yes, the Atlantic should, at a bare minimum, be in the conversation
yes.
for a strongest division in all of hockey. And then Detroit really has its work cut out for it here in future years, especially because you got to assume that Buffalo is only going to get better from here. And Montreal will presumably eventually figure it out. Ottawa, they always have our number, but nobody else's. Atlantic, absolutely strongest division in the NHL. On that note, wow, we're getting kind of close here, man. Like, it's
Edmonton Oilers beat the Stars. Before you start rooting for the Oilers, it was a fluke. Dallas, baby.
I'm never going to root for the Oilers. For one, I'm not rooting for McDavid, and I'm also not wanting to see Ken Holland have success outside of Detroit. Sorry,
no,
not going to happen.
No.
On that note, we got some business to take care of. In our weekly attempt to cleanse our souls, Happy Hour would like to apologize to feminists, women in general, Brock Baser, Brock Bowser, Don Cherry, Javi Baez, Dorothy, Marilyn Manson, Billy D. Williams, Baby Boomers, Ken Holland, and the Ottawa Senators. We're sorry. But not that, sorry. On that note, we got to get out of here. And you know what you're going to be hearing for the next 83 hours or so? Sessions. Nothing That's but right. sessions. Local original music. Adam finally got his wish. Nothing but sessions for an entire effing weekend.
You're being too kind, because you, the program director for Solid State Radio, has given Sessions its due every Memorial Day. And this is, I guess, what way to memorialize our veterans who have passed by Michigan-made music.
Yeah, makes so much sense today, then.
We were supposed to have the Indeed band in studio, and unfortunately, that couple of the guys just couldn't get off of work, and a couple of the guys were working lines for the electric company out there, so we understand what they're doing, and we thank them for their service. Unfortunately, they're not going to be there. They're not going to be at the Corn Road Bar, but you know who are going to be at the Corn Road Bar? The Screaming Casanovas. That's why we've kind of changed things up, and you're going to hear an interview back from 2021, which, Sean, do you realize that was over 3 years ago?
Wow. I feel so old now.
We were so young back then.
Having seen the Casanovas live, too, I can attest, they definitely have a whole other set of material they can bust out.
Oh, my God.
That will just absolutely kill the place.
You're hearing some OG stuff from the Casanovas. They're going to be playing the Corona Road Bar later on tonight. And then during this whole marathon, you will hear the most recent interview that I did with the Screaming Casanovas back from January of 2023. Apparently, January just makes it happen.
It's always the time of the year where I feel like we try and book the Screaming Casanovas, because then that's when it's like, because Kurt always brings such good, like, dark beer.
He does.
And
because the first time he was here, we gave him some really good beer. He felt bad. He's like, this is really good beer. So he brought his own kind of stuff. And yeah, the guy knows.
So we know to always book him during, you know, when it's like stout season. So we have some good
dark stout. January 2021, January 2023. That means this January, I need to have the Screaming Casanovas in studio.
I see. That's definitely a fair trade. On that note, Sessions, all the way up till 5 a.m. Tuesday morning. All being well.
Woo!
We'll talk to you Tuesday, I guess. See ya.